16. The first thing that I want to do before we get started with our presentation from Dr. Madsen is approve minutes from January the 12th, 2016. And I'll entertain a motion at that time. Commissioner Burkholder makes a motion to approve. All those in favor? Aye. Any opposed? Okay, thank you. And now we will go ahead and move to, we have Dr. Madsen join us up here at the table, and turn on the mic for her. So we welcome Dr. Susan Madsen, who is a member of our research subcommittee, but also a good colleague and ally that does great work in the academic community on this. So welcome, Dr. Madsen.
Thank you. I thought I would just kind of set the stage for what Pam Perlick and I have been discussing, and Anne a little bit as well. Give you a little background, and I'm kind of singing to the choir here. Lots of emails, but I'll still do it. And one of them is just to remind us all the importance of, and this is about college and graduation from college with women in Utah. Most of you know I've been, well, probably all of you know I've been working on this issue very assertively since about 2009, creating and founding the Utah Women in Education Project that merged into the Women and Education Initiative in 2011 after the governor had a task force on it and so forth. So that's a little bit of the background. But as we talk, and I am on the subcommittee for research of this commission, and as we talk about all of the important issues, and there's many important issues in terms of women in the economy specifically, but just a reminder that the education level of women is at the foundation of pretty much everything we're talking about in the commission, yet other things in terms of society, in terms of poverty, getting more women out of poverty and being able to support the families, in terms of getting women to the CEO level, in terms of the wage gap, in terms, I know you all understand this, but just a reminder that when we look at really issues around the education piece, how important it is that we move that forward with all of this. And one piece of that I want to talk about today that Pam Perlick and others we've been talking about is actually data. I published some reports that have been cited quite a bit in 2010, did some original research, qualitative research that has been helpful, published that in 2011, published a couple more briefs that I could get data on, but a lot has changed since then, and that is about 2011, the LDS mission changed, lots of things. The trouble is, and this is where Pam and I have discussed this, and Anne's been in that conversation a bit, and Tammy, the education advisor to the governor, we've discussed it with her, is that there's a lot of confusion right now in terms of the data. That's the bottom line. People are citing different data in a different way, and I'm talking about even last, and I don't know if anyone was here, but last December, there was a gathering from the GOED office of women CEOs and CEOs of that. I don't know if any of you were at that. Denise Hochtelin, President Hochtelin, and I were sitting next to each other and spoke a little bit, but Governor Herbert said, one of the statements that he made was, I wish the men were doing as well as the women in graduating from college. And the president and I looked at each other really quickly, like, what's going on? And then I was told a couple of other people heard him say that. So I, of course, being a bit assertive, that shocked some of you, I know, put together a quick brief that got put on his desk that said, okay, here's how you look at it. And then on the other side, President Holland, a couple of years ago, made a statement that the state of Utah is at the bottom in terms of graduation. Now, that's not true. We're at the bottom of some things, but we're below national average in terms of graduation. So there's so much being put out there. The trouble is, that when Pam and I were talking about this, is it's her and I, more than most people that know what the research is, and we're still kind of confused at this point because of all of these things coming out in terms of data. So, you know, one other quick example is that we don't, even at UVU, we're working really hard. Just the new enrollments that came out last week put us still at only 44% of female students at UVU are women. But we don't know deeper things. I'm in the room with the Vice President of Student Affairs and all these people, and I'm saying, we've got to figure out what's going on deeper. Because are there just less females in Utah County? No more. Are they leaving, going off to other institutions? Are they going out of state? Where are they going? Where are people? And we don't even have answers. So we know generally, okay, bottom line, we know there's an issue. We have no doubt that there's an issue. All right? I mean, we hit the bottom of the ranking list in every ranking that comes out. We don't like that. We know that there's issues, and some of the latest press say there's not an issue because there's about equal people coming out of the latest data, men and women graduating from college. One of the problems with that piece of data, and we can't get from the UC system it broken down, is they're lumping certificates, associates, bachelors, and graduates so that it can be said about half of the awards and degrees are coming to women and half. But I used to be able to get more data on that and can't even get that broken down. So we don't know, you know, there has been more associates, more than bachelors. I all of my basic reports that used to come out from me were partnered with the Utah System of Higher Education, but we're struggling with that data, even if we have that. So bottom line, there's lots of issues, and we're not understanding some of this. Yet, the research is very clear. When you understand data better, you can actually target the interventions better. And so those are a couple of examples. Last week, every single day, whether it was on, I think it was on two radio shows, or I gave four speeches, every single day I could have used more up-to-date data. That's how many questions come at me, and I think Pam gets that as well. And so no one right now in the state is really on that. I'm still kind of overseeing, I have too many projects right now, but kind of overseeing the Utah Women and the Education Initiative, but I have a part-time person, and that's fine. I'm going to do it for a couple more years. I'm not looking to grow that at all. We just want to support and so forth. But in Pam's office, she has a few nuggets of things, but no one's really on it. In fact, when Pam and I talked last week, those are her words. No one's really on this data right now to help us understand this. And you know, this is, I've made a note that Pam said too, she was not able to join us today. She said, this is a new community. You've all heard Pam Perlick speak on the demographics, right? This is a new community. Even in the past 5 years, it's different with the demographics, with the issues that we've talked about. So let me move to the next one. I've got four main points. I'm on number three. So what is needed to help us really get more clarity around the issue with women and education? And by the way, there's other issues that relate to women in education. One of the projects Pam has a wonderful postdoc working on right now is around fertility issues and how that relates. And of course, fertility issues relate to the education piece as well. And so as Pam and I talked, and I'm not speaking totally for her, but we just talked, what we feel is needed is a possible postdoc student that can actually understand multiple pieces of data from what's called the iPads. I don't know if you're familiar with that. That's what the whole I've used iPads a lot I don't personally run it. I have to hire people to run it. But it's the national system that has all higher ed, post-secondary, I should say, data in it. It runs by cohorts. It's got all the rules. The mission is really hard to understand in that, but that's a set. The census data is another set. The Utah System of Higher Education is another set. And PAM actually has a couple of other sets. And because of the situation with women, we have wonderful women in Utah, but we're a little unique in terms of our choices with careers and maybe going out and serving missions for 18 months and different things, that even deeper than the initial data I did is research is to find somebody, a postdoc student, that could look at all of the data that's out there, women's lives, things that the YWCA is so interested in and have addressed in their well-being report. But looking at other pieces of life to really understand the education piece, but some of the other things like fertility and so forth as well. Pam also mentioned when we were talking that marriage, fertility, the economy in general, migrant issues, minority women of color, we don't understand some of the outcomes that come with this. And just the complexity. So we're looking at this education piece is so foundational to all the other pieces, and I'm on the research subcommittee, and the study that we've talked about design is so important as well. That's important. I think this is a different piece. This is really looking at the educational piece and some of the complexity. So I think that's what we really wanted to discuss and put out there is that it's becoming clear, not just to us as researchers, but I'll just give you one quick example. The Women's Success Center is down at Utah Valley University. Many of you have seen them. I just met with their advisory board of businesswomen and so forth, and they were like, just give us the data. And we're like, well, we're not sure about this number, and we're not sure, but just tell us. They're from business, you know. Just, you can run the data. You should just give us the number. And we're like, but. We wish we had some of the answers. And so one of the things that we just wanted to put out there is something that we could think, I know it impacts women, the economy, and the state of Utah in a big way. And so how do we move forward? Pam and I had chatted about, you know, the option of maybe reconvening the subcommittee on research again and really use that group to think, just really wrestle through what are those pieces, what are some options. We do know there's, to do the analysis of what we're thinking of even in a way that can impact, we really need someone with the right background in terms of demographics, demography, sociology, and so forth. And so I think our suggestion here, and do you have any questions? But our suggestion is, this is something that we could take back to the subcommittee and have us as a subcommittee wrestle through this. If we don't have good foundational data, we're going to really struggle with the targeted interventions. And we've got some movement going in the state right now, and I think it's a good time to do that.
Thank you. Wow. It is so empty. Thank you for all the work you've done. That's much, and it's been enlightening to see reports. And I've had a relationship with Dr. Kerlick for more than a decade. I wouldn't say how long, but we work really closely when I was the director of the Office of Women's Affairs, which was clearly, it's an eye-opening moment when she presents changing demographics. And I mean, like 90% of our colleagues need to get educated on that. But just, I'm trying to understand, I get what you're saying, and I agree. I think, especially from the academic perspective, and trying to make policy decisions, make sense of that data, I'm trying to quantify the commitment of the universities, and I would say all of them, I mean, higher ed, to this type of research. And you know, it's tricky because they'll say, well, we support our women, blah, blah, blah. But this is beyond that. This is just data. And this was part of our conversation when we were trying to get, you know, financial support for this type of studies and this type of research. I mean, is there a way that we can quantify? I mean, I don't want another research to quantify their support, but is there a way that we can say, you know, the main five universities, this is how much they provided on this very specific research. I don't, you know, regardless of what they do with, you know, the women's groups and everything else that I, you know, I'm happy that I'm doing that stuff. How much is of every president committing? I mean, or do we make a call? And if that's, I feel that would be appropriate from our group to put a call from a policy perspective saying we want each university to commit $10,000 just for research, all of them in the next year. I mean, is that something that will, that you as an academic, you know, in your university will welcome? What we don't want is to get in the middle of a turf fight, and so we do a lot of those already, and I don't want to put people in different, in odd positions, but is that something that could be helpful? And I feel like we can put some of that pressure from our side and say, look, guys, I mean, directly to the president. This won't even go to sociology, like, I mean, behavioral science, I don't care. This goes to the president as the person in charge of that university and say, you're responsible for the women and the future of women, you know, gender representation in this higher education institution. We want $20,000 from you on a yearly basis. Figure out how you do it. I mean, whether he comes back and says, well, give, you know, allocate funding as a legislature, but I want that commitment from them. Is that something that you find that could be helpful, or is that going to be
helpful? It could. I don't know. That's an interesting idea. It could. I do know at University of Utah, USU, Utah Valley University, in all those institutions, I would say Dixie, too, has an up-and-coming women's leadership center. There's a lot of funding going into efforts specifically around women, just to run centers and support and women's resource kinds of things. And so I think there's a lot of support going in that direction. I'm not sure if that approach would work or not. I guess that's what I'm saying, to try and get funding from the institutions. It may.
Yeah,
I just don't know.
And I guess to the committee, to me, is I just think great work. I mean, you know, I spend a lot of time in those organizations where we get asked to speak all the time. I mean, I'm sure my colleagues the same and members of this commission. But it's, to me, it's, you guys talk about this lack of data. And I'm kind of like, if we can't get the data because we don't have a process for the data, then we're missing a big portion. And I'm happy for all the leadership pieces that need to happen. And that will continue. But at the same time, where is our data piece and the academic piece? And are we going to be behind all the time because we can't keep up with that data? So I don't know, maybe for the commission, I don't want to put you on the spot on that, but I think it's a good worth conversation to go to all presidents of all universities and colleges equally and say, look, you should be at least having, you know, some commitment, some financial commitment to this from your own budget, from the president's budget. I don't want it coming from the women's leadership group or, you know, the center, because I don't want to take that away from one.
That would be my piece,
and I would like it from his budget or her budget, you know, at the president's level. I don't know. Just food for thought. Thank you.
I think that's a good idea. I did want to mention that Commissioner Dave Buehler was in, kind of copied on one of the things and did say he would, if there was such a position or someone even temporarily that had this, he would make sure that he shared the data with them. So there was a stream with a number of people on that. But I think I think that's an interesting idea.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Dr. Madsen, for bringing this important issue to our attention. A couple of things. One, in response to Senator Escamilla, I think that the issue that you're pointing out is not simply an issue of data, but of doing a meta-analysis of a number of different research studies that have been done recently, I mean, including
the YWCA, the Institute for Women's Policy Research, with whom we worked very closely on state-level data, Voices for Utah Children. Mm-hmm. So we're getting
some of the Utah Foundation.
Yes. So we are getting good data, but they're not reconcilable yet. And there are some gaps in understanding that, which means that there are different stories that are being told. And I really support your request to refer this issue to our research committee to consider the issues you've raised most carefully and more carefully, and then investigate a potential data gap and how we might proceed. Because if that research committee, on the basis of its work, concludes that we need to think more carefully as a commission about how we're going to support such a meta-analysis, then I think there will be the weight of the commission for a number of potential options, including what Senator Escamilla raised, as well as perhaps some other things that we come up with. So I think a referral to the research committee is a good idea. I support that.
Thank you.
So one thing that what I'm hearing from this is a lack of standardization in terms of where the institutions are, and even if it's not aligned with UC, I mean, it's still like there's a disconnect at a variety of different levels. I'm going to make the motion that we do assign our subcommittee on research to explore this further and come back to us with some recommendations. What I was just mentioning to Chair Edwards is that, you know, I'd like to have you come and talk to us about why, where is the disconnect? Why are we all over the map in terms of the way the data is collected at the different institutions? And why are you not allowed to extrapolate it based on the different certifications and degrees? I mean, it seems to me like that would be fairly simple to do, but I don't know whether it's an issue of turf or whether, I mean, I understand, and Chair Edwards could certainly speak to this because I believe she sits on higher education appropriations, and that they're stretched as it is, but I also don't want there to be this perception that seems to be out there that everything is okay when it's just a matter of nuance to show us that it really isn't, because that makes it more difficult, as you have mentioned, Dr. Mouse, and for us to do our work, because we don't have the foundational data to move forward on the other pieces of the work that we need to do. And to provide policy recommendations within that context of higher ed of what needs to be done to assure completion, as well as enrollment, as well as pursuit of additional degrees, whatever that is that women want, things that you just mentioned related to fertility and things that aren't going to impact male students like they do women. That's one thing that I would recommend as we do that.
Can I just mention one other thing I forgot to say in terms of data is just the different messages that come forth. So even right now, if we have the same, and I'm not sure because I can't see this data, the same number of women and men graduating with, let's say, bachelor's degrees. So the messages that go forth from certain areas say, well, they're about equal. We are 10% below national average it's not all about men and women. Compare it. When we take women against the nation, we're 10% lower than the nation in bachelor's degrees. I mean, we're way off. So, and then the other piece was, you know, just being comfortable maybe with this, but when we look in society, we have the biggest wage gap. So our concern is not just our traditionally aged women coming out and getting bachelor's degrees, but we, I believe, have a responsibility to keep working with women who are of non-traditional and have children and to get them back. So the story, the way the story is being told is from different areas is different. And I think, you know, if you boil it down to just even some one or two pagers on the real stuff, people think that's easy. But anyway, I wanted to mention,
You know it's not. I just wanted to mention, just even with the data, we've just got to be careful in those perceptions.
It's an interpretation, always an interpretation.
Any other comments or questions?
I'm going to go back to Senator Escamilla and then back to the Commissioner.
Thank you, Brooklyn. I'm sorry, I finally have a tight agenda. You know, I just want to thank you for that. I was at a meeting where I was corrupted, but then when we look at the numbers, I was trying the point that you were making about national levels, and they were adamant that, no, we have the same rate of women graduating as men. And I'm like, well, and even years of completion, is it taking them 8 to 10 years to complete a bachelor's degree versus, you know, 4 or 5, whatever. So I appreciate that it was, you know, I'm not a, obviously I wish I could spend more time on the academic side because it helps, it's a different conversation. We sometimes have to simplify that, like you said, in one page or one paragraph or one picture and try to make a policy decision out of that paragraph is critical. And so I just want to thank you for all the work you've done. Sorry I don't respond as much, but you know, we do read it. Like those readings, you know, when you wake up at 3 in the morning and have nothing else to do. I'm like, oh, let me read those Dr. Matson's important reports on, you know, gender equity in women. They have been interesting, and I, you know, sometimes I want to email you, I'm scary at that time, but it's weird thing of me, but please know that your work is not being taken for granted. I mean, there's a lot of us that's all we have to back up our points or the stories that we see with our constituents are real. These are real women we know, and then your data help us make that story, you know, have some backup, and we appreciate that work. So please, we hope to have you for many, many more years.
Thank you, sir.
And we appreciate that support. Thanks.
Thank you. I was simply going to ask whether a second for your motion is in order.
That would be great.
If so, I would like to second your motion.
So
we refer this to the
Chair. So we have a motion on the floor to refer this issue for further review and ask the Subcommittee on Research to return with recommendations as to how the Commission should move forward in terms of assisting their work in this regard. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Thank you, Dr. Matson. And through the Center, I thank Dr. Perlick, too, about the work that you're doing and bringing this to the committee, the Commission's attention as well as with your work with the Subcommittee. Thank you. So I want to move to the next item on the agenda, which is inviting Senator Escamilla, if we wanted to open it up for others, but I'm not seeing any other legislators here to present on their legislation. And we'll turn the time over to her to talk about her
bill. Thank you, Madam Chair, and I hope it's over that I shouldn't stay here.
Thanks.
And I apologize for eating, but I'm here. I'm here. That's how I feel, but I guess it's not true that Dr. clarified that. It's not a complete two. Anyways, we'll deal with that later. You'll hear me crying later about that. But thank you again for the indulgence on this bill. And now it's numbered. Now we have a language and it's public. And I just, you know, have one touch basis on going back to the committee. This is a bill that addresses commercial interior designers, and we do have just an expert that's been working on this bill for the last 2 years, and she's presented before to the commission, I'm sorry, and I, you know, more than anything, want to let you know that we've worked really hard in the last year, meeting with the architects and their association, in good faith. I was hoping to have, as Senator Henderson very eloquently put it last time, a cumbaya bill. I'm not sure. I think at the end of the day, there are groups that just won't let anybody else, regardless of their training, qualifications, or education, get into, you know, their industry. And I respect this as it is the nature of what it is, but this bill has been carefully drafted. If you look at the two main concerns that they came up with, and those are going to be defined on line 75 and 76, It's pretty technical, by the way, and we made it very technical for the purpose of being clear and addressing the concerns of the architects. And I believe in incrementalism. I was taught that in my master's program, a whole class on that. And I hooray for my teacher and my professor, but this will be an incremental process, and I think the commercial interior designers get that part, and they're happy to go through this process. But we're only having this specific certification be impacting occupancy groups of B and M. If you're familiar with the International Building Code, those are very specific areas where they can only practice. So this is not opening a door for, potentially live hazard situations like it was being addressed last session. So I'd be very careful of, out of all the different occupancy groups available, we're only sticking to BNM as in good faith showing an incremental process. And if you can see from that line 67 all the way to literally 117, it explains very detailed what they can do and what they can do. So, I mean, we can get more detail, but almost to the height of a wall. We went to that level of detail to just show, again, good faith. There are people that have avenues to show, the vast majority of them have 4-year degrees, and they still have to pass a national test. They still have to be certified through the National Association. Really, they've shown everything, and they are taking full liability of their work as if it will be an architect using his stamp or signature. So liability will be the same, and that's part of this whole process. So with that, Madam Chair, I'm open for any questions or related to the bill.
Do you want your guest to testify to this?
I think she made a great presentation last time. And then we're just here to answer any questions. The reality is more than 95% of commercial interior designers are female or women. And we do have 2 universities that provide 4-year degrees for this specific work. And that would be Weber State University and Utah State University. Those are 2 of our prime universities. So I did, and I will say this, I will publicly say this, I do take offense when they criticize the degrees that would come out of our own universities, because these are trained people with 4-year degrees. And architects have an architect, you have to have 5 years of education. Higher ed, in this case, is a 4-year degree. There are other avenues that is provided to their national association. But here in Utah, why this is so critical, we do have a lot of women, talking about women in their universities, that are participating in these programs at our 2, like I said, Weber and Utah State University.
I did have a question. You mentioned 3 criteria that need to be met. One was a 4-year degree, the second was national certification, and I can't remember the third item was that you mentioned that they have to.
So this will go through DOPPL, the licensure process, and it's up to DOPPL to put a state level testing, and they will choose that. They usually go for the national, and when we talk to DOPPL, that's their incline is to use a national test just to make the licensure come, like the interpreters,
mm-hmm.
as you're very aware of them, representative. And they, it will be that, and am I?
Yeah, so a call.
Sorry, I should have
just
my lady. She's the expert.
Well, we'll see if I'm an expert. So
identify yourself.
My name is Jamie Kuhn. So I'm the lobbyist for Ideal for Utah. So the coalition is not just interior designers, but it's also the whole community as well. So we have a lot of educators as well that serve on our coalition. So your question about the criteria. We have an examination, they have to have certain education, and then they have an internship as well. So it's the internship part. Which is similar, I guess, across the board, same as the architects would be. We modeled this really after the Architects Practice Act, so.
And of course, we have to pay the fee, and
I know there was a group that has nothing to do with interior designers or architects, for that matter, that was very upset because they have to pay a fee. I'm still, it's like a mystery. Why are they even, you have, any interest in this? The reality is right now there's no way you can practice, period, unless you're an architect. This, like I said, opens a small door, and you can see how detailed that, and how specific that door is for these individuals that are trained, qualified, and tested to have an opportunity. They have to pay a fee, like the architects. I mean, it's just the nature of welcome to a licensure/certification process. We do it with attorneys, we do it with, actually, I don't know how many careers have, professions have to be licensed and tested, and you have to pay a fee. I mean, we can't do more than that. We're not going to pay it out of our general fund. I think if you invested 4 years, social workers do, if you invested 4 years in your career, your education, you're probably expected to pay something for being able to practice. So.
Any other questions besides this, Commissioner Buchholder? Thank you. Senator, you mentioned this being part of an incremental process that you have planned, and I know that you've had many conversations with architects and others who have an interest in this area. Could you give us a sense of how they view the final version of this bill and what response you're expecting at this point, because I know you've done so much work to get to this place?
That's a great question. Thank you for so I can clarify it. So what we did in order to address any concerns is we put a repeal date, meaning we will come back as a legislature and review. You could always review this. I can come back next year and say this was a complete disaster, repeal this whole thing, take it away, something happened. But we are giving a 5-year for sure repeal process, meaning they will have to legislatively say no to the repeal. So we right now, if you look at the last line, 288 and 289, the State Certification Act is repealed July 1st of 2021. That's, I call that the incremental piece. So at that point, you say, this has worked. Nobody has, this, for them, it's going to be the end of the world. We're going to have buildings falling apart because there's, a modification in the wall. And I want to take those seriously. I don't undermine the concerns, and we've been, 10 months meeting with them because, if someone says there's a possibility that something like that could happen with more than 30 people in a room, I take that seriously. So this gives you, this is what the norm is for our legislative process, a 5-year sunset provision, and that's what we're giving here. To me, the incremental part is 5 years from now, or even if things are working well, maybe we add one other occupancy group for every 5 years. That's the incremental piece, but it's showing the faith and saying, look, just give us 2 occupancy groups. We're staying away from any healthcare facility, which was a big deal because that's a lot of the work, a lot of the commercial interior designers do in other parts of the country. But I was being, trying to be a good player and understanding their concerns with people that may have a medical condition in case of an emergency, may be harder for them to, leave the facility. We're basically leading to retail and some, just buildings that are more, to their, the way they were assessing easier, from an architect perspective. I'm not an expert on that. So that was the incremental portion, but more than anything is that sunset review in 5 years is pretty standard for the legislative process, and I feel it's, showing good faith that we will have a full review of the legislature. Whether I'm here or not, 5 years from now, someone will be reviewing this and saying, yeah, this is great, it's working, hey, let's actually open it for everything. We haven't had an issue, or there's been problems, repeal it, which we can always do that during any session. I hope that answers your question.
Ms. Coombs, can you tell me about how many professionals would be affected within this carpet that would be allowed now to operate within the full scope of their skills and their capabilities if we move forward with this legislation?
Yeah.
one of the things that you guys were just speaking about, and one of the things you were just speaking about regarding data, specifically data from Utah State and from the colleges that do have these programs, it's very difficult to find that. So what we did with our fiscal note before was just to look and see how many of them are graduating, if it's a graduation rate. But again, it's not very consistent. So the fiscal note that we did for last session is based off of those numbers that we had to do projections on. And it was productive, like about 100 or so is how many students that we have across the whole state. So that includes like LDS Business College. At the time, also AI, the Art Institute, was also had a two-year program that then ceased in so that there was an opportunity for them as well. So you've got different layers to this. Again, the data can be a little, it would be great if we had some more data. They also don't necessarily matriculate either. So you get a lot that start and then don't finish. Or what I've heard, and this is all anecdotal for the most part, meaning I can't find the data for this, that they leave the state because they can't practice. So we have a hard time tracking down really specific numbers on this. So any...
The estimate is 100.
Yes.
That's how... you're probably going to see the fiscal note about the same number.
Yeah. In addition, though, we've got our professionals, too. So there were 138 NCIDQ professionals that we have on our record as well. So
that's 138 on record that are professionals. And then the 100 is anticipated students within this...
Yeah.
Within a year or in a...
Yes, I would say within a year. Okay. It depends on
when they finish and what happens.
Finish, get the test,
yeah.
And all of this. All
it'll
of
take, yeah, it'll take a couple years, too, because the NJDQ process is a three-part process, so they can take the first exam right after they graduate. Then they do their internship hours with the licensed design professional, and then they go forward.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Any other questions for the senators from the Ms. Coons? If you, by any chance, present this to the professional licensure board, I may be saying the name of that board.
Yeah. So I talked to Senator Weiler and Rep. Senator Snell, I believe they're the co-chair. They didn't want to secure it again. They already made a decision, actually, to actually be full-blown open the last 2 years. So they said, you don't need to go and present. We're beyond hearing this. We're tired. Like, just move forward. They approved this the last 2 years, so this year they didn't think it was necessary to present.
Great.
Even though my deal is more restrictive,
yeah.
They initially wanted just to let them completely practice the whole thing.
Right. So you, what that licensure professional, that board, was, they made a recommendation to even be, I guess, more inclusive in the practice capacities for this group. And what you've done, rather than a full licensure, is to pull it back to
certification with restrictive occupancy groups and restrictive maneuver of anything, and very explicit hide very, very restrictive this bill compared to what they initially wanted. So they're still, at that point, they feel they've had enough evidence to feel that they can do bigger practice, but the bill is more restrictive than that, and they didn't feel they have to listen to that component.
When you get on the House side, I ran a bill for certification a couple of years ago, and had some very interesting comments from House colleagues and had a lot of support actually from individuals that I was not expecting to have support this. And I'll talk to you offline about that.
Thank you. Yeah, I hope so. Anything will help. I think it's well overdue, and I feel that the group has been treated very poorly, and you know the irony is I think it has to do a lot with the fact that most of them are women, and I hate to make a statement like that, but I, even their, you know, just the lobbying component and some of the wording and the way they were expressing about their abilities and capacity, it was a little bit offensive, and to the point of Senator Henderson was frustrated. She's like, you know, this is, we're getting to a point of, you know, we are better than that, period. And it's very offensive for professionals. And to me, it was more offensive when I realized we have that many institutions providing this level of education. And I'm thinking, well, then if it's an issue of education, that needs to be addressed with the universities, higher ed. But there's nothing in our programs that are not, doesn't make them qualified to do this type of work. And so I'm hoping that by toning it down and putting some restrictions, more than anything on the occupancy groups, which is very difficult to get, an agreement. But I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, something that it is a legislative session, so things happen in a weird way, and we're ready to present, but I think we've shown enough good faith in the process, and we feel it's time.
Commissioner Colby, a question.
Thank you.
My question is to the commission as a whole, and specifically to the Public Policy Committee, and what guidance you can give the rest of us about how it is that we can respond to legislation that is coming before the commission, and have we,
so we
established a role in that, or are we still working on
so
it?
So we haven't established specific checkoff or, a guideline to this is what we do and then this, but I'm going to defer to our statutory authority. And under 35A-11-202B, we are our purpose is to identify and recommend implementation of specific policies, procedures, and programs to respond to the rights, needs, and impact of women in the economy. And I think that we would be open to entertaining a motion from Senator Escamilla to ask us to do that with this piece of legislation and can take a vote and say under that auspices of that section, we are recommending the specific policy be move forward. So,
would that, Madam Chair, move to just do exactly what you just very eloquently put in your explanation?
That sounds good. So, Senator Escamilla has asked the Commission to support SB 117 Commercial Interior Design Certification Modifications with a stamp of approval or endorsement by the Commission. And we'll entertain any questions as regard to the motion. Being none, may I have a second?
Second.
Chair Edward seconds. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. It looks like that we have a unanimous support of the members that were here in the committee, and then I'll ask Gail to make a notation of who is here so that you can move forward with that and see that the Women in the Economy Commission supports your legislation moving forward.
Thank you. Thank you. And Commissioner members, thank you for that.
Super. Thank you, Ms. Coons. Next, we have on our agenda reports from subcommittees. I apologize. Chair Edwards would like to present a bill for our consideration.
Unfortunately, I do not have a bill number on this, but the title is Working Parent Employment Benefits or Amendment. And this bill gives GOED the option to consider non-wage compensation for an employee who is a parent of at least one child when they're considering applicants for the EdTIF program. So the EdTIF program is Economic Development Tax Increment Financing. It's a post-performance program that gives tax benefits to companies up to 30% of new revenue that is brought to the state because of a company who either relocates to the state or expands their operations within the state. And there's a whole list of qualifications that GOED may include in their consideration of granting this tax benefit, including consideration of high-paying jobs. So we made an adjustment in the EdTIF program last year or the year before that specified more clearly what that meant to be a high-paying job. There was some concern that state funds were going towards jobs that were, either jobs that would have come here already or jobs that were just average-paying jobs. So we clarified they needed to be high-paying, which was defined as at least 110% of the average county wage. There are a couple of other considerations as well around that part of the issue.
And as we have thought about this tool, this really unique tool that only the state has, is if we're putting state funding towards expanding or relocating a company, let's make sure that company is going to be, they're part of the good guys. They're going to be doing things right for families. So this is not a requirement for GOED to include this, but it provides them an option of including the following, and this is what we have in there right now as part of what would be considered working parent benefits. So it actually calls them working parent benefits, and then it has, I think, 8 different considerations: parental leave, on-site child care or a child care subsidy, flexible work schedule, adoption benefits, support with the child with special needs, paid sick leave, and paid family care leave. So we have had this bill out with GOED. Their concern, while they're very supportive of this, their liaison with the legislature has sent this out to her board, and her comments that she's received back is this should be mandatory, it doesn't go far enough, and that they're, as well, many of people on her board were saying comments like that, and there were a couple of comments concerned with maybe this was too restrictive, mm-hmm. and that we're trying like we're trying to engineer a certain type of company to come in, which I would say that's exactly what we're trying to do. We're trying to say if we're utilizing state dollars for these kinds of tax benefits,
these are a value
for exactly as Dr. Madison mentioned. Our non-traditional employees, which frankly includes women of all ages who are, and really parents of all ages. So I think there's a real strong case to be made here. Many of you are aware Representative Romero and I attended the NCSL Opportunities for Working Families Conference last May, and this, you know, I don't think that this is something that NCSL has the template on. I've been in touch with them, and they don't have other states who are using this tool in this way, but frankly, I think it's an innovative way for us to address this need. And it's probably not appropriate to take a motion on a bill we don't have a number for yet. But I just wanted everyone to know that's in the works, and I think it really aligns quite nicely with some of the things we're trying to work on. So
I'm trying to see if we have the ability to take votes electronically, because I'm thinking once the bill is read, we could send out an email to everybody and then just get, you know, support for it.
Yeah,
right.
It wasn't
quite ready yet. And it doesn't say anything about prohibiting us from doing it, but it's not affirmative either. So let's make a motion to support it in intent. And go from there, and then we can figure out the logistics around that later.
Maybe we could talk to, Kathy Bonus and see if we're restricted from that, or because it doesn't actually mention how the support has to be gathered, and I think there are through we've actually passed a bill having to do with like city councils and some other open meetings within open meetings that they can take votes online. So, I don't know.
And again, there's the provision says we identify and recommend implementation of specific policies, procedures, et cetera. What we're doing is we're identifying and recommending this proposal in its current form or its intent. And supporting and asking the commission to support that. So is that your motion?
That is a motion.
Yes, sure. A second? Thank you, Senator. All those in favor of supporting this proposal?
Aye.
Any no's? All righty. So let's go ahead and put a stamp of approval on that. Thank you. Any other business? That's fine. What I wanted to do, we really don't have a report for the subcommittee of policy at this point, but I do want to give the other two subcommittees, if they have any updates, quick updates, to be able to do that. So,
Commissioner Wallace.
You have an update for the communication. So committee, we met again about a week and a half ago. A priority is our website launch, and we have decided that it should come with a press release to go along with it. And we would like to have someone from a research committee, probably the chair, possibly, to join at least one of our communication subcommittee meetings to coordinate together. At the worst case scenario, that would be over a conference call or via email as well. Let's see, we had discussed also potentially listing bills during the session that impact women in the economy, if that makes a lot of sense. And then, of course, if we're voting on supporting them, we want to make sure that that's also listed as which ones we're endorsing as well. Still, we're working on the logo revision. I'm getting some really good feedback to share with Utah Interactive on some options for a different logo, because we were not happy with the one that they gave us without any options. So I'll be making sure about that. Our tentative launch date is going to be February 15th, but we hope to have it before the end of the session, the latest.
That would be fun.
We want it within the session time with the press release, which leads me to my next request, is that we would like to have a special interest or compelling story of a woman within that press release as basically an example of who we're... An example, just one member, so many, of a woman that maybe could be helped by what the commission is doing. So I'm wondering if there are any suggestions of a woman like that.
I'm wondering, Ms. Coombs, do you have somebody that we could possibly showcase?
I think that's
a
wonderful example.
If you'd like a student, or if you'd like somebody who has been in the profession for a while, just let me know.
Just in our conversations with communications, probably the one that's been in the career already. We really kind of wanted to profile maybe the average kind of woman in the state when we're thinking about what kind of person to highlight. So and if you have anyone who's minority even,
yes.
That might be a good idea.
I wanted to mention that this last week alone, I probably had four or five requests for me to tell them what bills are related in this session, and I'm like, I'm not sure. So I just wanted to emphasize the importance of listing each year what's happening, and then some of us can link over from our websites. And so I just wanted to mention.
Perfect. I'm glad you brought that up, because that would be a request I have. Who should I contact to know which bills impact women in the economy? So we know which ones to list. Who would that come from?
Well, I think we could start with these first two, and then let's see. I'll check with Senator Henderson, even though we haven't officially approved it. I think it's something that she's very concerned about and wants to make sure. Those are the only ones that I can think of at present, but I know that, and then also perhaps Angela Romero's bill on parental leave. And what we could do is list all of the bills and say the two that we definitely took the motions on, which are the two we had today, but other bills of interest.
Sure.
That are being considered by the commission are, and then we could list the rest of them that haven't that necessarily been heard, but that we've identified as either concerning or disconcerning. And what we could do is even just say, you know, support concept or have motion made to support, and then maybe flag for, how do we put it?
Watch.
Oh, we could do a watch list of ones that we're not quite sure what they're about, or that they might provide actually some concern to the commission. So let's do that.
And I will maybe even present the list that's going to be on the website when it goes live to make sure we're not missing any as well.
That sounds good. And actually, Commissioner, if there are ones that the Women's Business Center maybe have identified, you might want to let us know about them, and we can just automatically put them on the list. Or if there are some from the research committee or others who see within the education realm, you know, just send us, and I'll have them send to you, Commissioner Wallace, those bills that might be of concern or import.
Is there, I know early on there was talk of a possible wage gap. Is that moving forward?
I don't think I've heard of any that have been, I mean, people have toyed with the idea, but I haven't heard anything that's been unveiled yet. I know that Representative Romero is working on a paid leave one, so.
I met with somebody, a student at BYU, I don't think it was UBU, that they had wanted to put together. Well, they already had one draft form, so I don't...
Right, and I know that they had addressed it. In fact, they met with Representative Edwards at one point during the fall. It's just that it never got laid underneath it.
Well, the last thing I just want to, I guess, as a review from the last report that I gave as well, is that the website needs to include a call to action, and we'd like to give examples and link to those in the community that are doing good in these areas and advancing women in the main areas that fall in line with our guiding principles. So I think we voted on those yet.
Well, we had them, but we just haven't voted on them yet. And what I wanted to do is, I've been trying to convene a meeting of the policy committee. We just haven't been able to because we're getting ready for the session. So
we're going to be everything in those directions.
Yeah, I just, you know, quote unquote, officially haven't really adopted them, but I think we can work within what we've got statutorily to kind of move things along. So,
any questions about communications?
It looks like
Commissioner for COVID, you can have a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was simply going to say that within the year, because of the work that the YWCA is doing on public policy, we'll at some point have a list of legislation of interest to women in a number of different areas. So I'm hoping that a year from now, and actually much sooner, but next year when we're having this conversation, you will actually be able to go to our website or be in communication with us about legislation that's affecting women.
And what would be great is that when we move forward with that, if we have something that we're watching or that we're supporting, then we can also mention other affiliated organizations like the YWCA that is also, so that it's not just us, but it shows that we have the backing of other organizations and entities that are supporting or opposing legislation.
That is wonderful, especially listing the legislation and the bills that are up, because, again, our portion of the call to action on the website is the Women in the Economy Commission impact policy,
yes.
And we're asking others to impact in their areas. So that's a good way to show what we're doing in our area.
Great. Thank you so much. And Commissioner Barnett, let us know if there is anything related to the watch list for the AFL-CIO and other labor groups that might particularly affect women in those particular trades or families that we might want to also bring to the attention of them. Perfect.
We haven't actually approved them yet.
Okay, sounds great. All righty. So I'm going to move over. Commissioner Burkholder, would you be able to give us just an update as to where we're at with research, or even if you have had a chance to meet yet at the subcommittee?
We have not met yet.
All right. But I'm sure we will soon. We've got a lot of work to do. So I haven't heard anything from Commissioner Robinson. I hope to do so soon. All right. Thank you so much. If there is no other business to come before the commission, I would like to go ahead and move a motion of adjournment. Okay? All right. All right. Thank you, everyone who joined us today. I know it's not fun to come to the council during the session, parking, et cetera, but we appreciate your attendance.